Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Good day, Internet.
Happy Monday, Nika. How's it going?
Monday is good.
Yeah? You've been traveling. I'm glad you made it back.
Yeah, I got back late last night, and then I'm heading out the end of the week as well. So
thank you for spending some of your precious time with the Daily Tech News Show, folks.
Wouldn't be a better place that I could be than here with you guys.
That's nice of you to say. All right, let's get to some tech news. Here we go. In three, two. Daily Tech News Show is made possible by you listening right now. Thanks to all of you, including Tim Deputy, Brandon Brooks, Hector Bones, new patrons Allison, Tony Adorno, and Catlow54. Welcome, everybody. Woo, we love new patrons. Also, Bramerica, your shout out was sponsored by Matt Zaglin. On this episode of DTNS, why UK banks object to the Apple Card, the top payment processor in Nigeria, isn't somebody you've heard of worldwide, and why AI is so misunderstood. Nobody can understand what makes AI work. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, March 4th, 2024 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
From the suburbs of Atlanta, I'm Nika Montfort.
Finally, under sunny skies, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Oh, my friends, it's good to be back for another week of technology news, and we got some good stuff for you today. Let's start with the quick hits. The European Commission fined Apple 1.8 billion euros Monday for abusing its dominant market position in the distribution of music streaming apps. Basically, Spotify complained. Apple got in trouble for restricting app developers like Spotify from informing users about or providing instructions for finding cheaper ways to pay for a subscription outside the app. Apple doesn't like to let people do this. They say, look, you use our in-app payment system or you shut up about other places where you could pay for a subscription. Spotify filed a complaint about the practice in 2019. The EC investigated and has now ordered Apple to remove the provisions prohibiting such restrictions for music apps. But it's kind of a moot decision in a way, because starting March 8th, Europe's Digital Markets Act will prohibit Apple from placing such restrictions on any app, at least in Europe.
Google modified how to select filters from file search in Google Drive for iOS. You can now filter by file type, opened, and last modified from a drop-down menu. The feature will come to Google Drive for Android very soon.
Google feature coming to iOS first. You don't see that every day. Interesting.
No, not at all.
Uh-huh. Large language model maker Anthropic released Claude 3, Opus, Sonnet, and Haiku, all versions of Claude 3. They came out Monday. And of course, Anthropic says they're faster and more powerful than the previous models. Opus is the most powerful. That's your GPT-4 equivalent. It's also the most expensive if you want to use it. Sonnet is more compact. And Haiku is even more compact and coming soon. Claude 3 chatbot can summarize up to 200,000 words. That's compared to ChatGPT's 3,000. Anthropic will also let Claude 3 users upload images and documents for analysis.
In AI ethics news, OpenAI, Salesforce, Hugging Face Scale AI, and a few dozen other companies signed a pledge to build AI for good, for the good of humanity. Meanwhile, India's Ministry of Electronics and IT issued an advisory Friday requiring significant tech companies to make sure their services and or products do not permit any bias or discrimination or threaten the integrity of the electoral process. This is largely focused on AI models.
And Microsoft announced it's going to show off new games coming to the Xbox in a partner preview event starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Wednesday, March 6th. This time, the announcement is going to feature around a dozen new trailers from Capcom, EA, Nexon, and a few others. And that is a look at our quick hits. Another big announcement today, Apple announced you can now order the 13 and 15-inch MacBook Air laptops with the M3 chip inside. Those will start shipping on March 18th. Bloomberg's Mark Gurman indicates this is the first of a couple of months' worth of new product announcements that Apple's going to make on the web without holding events. Among the announcements, Gurman expects to follow are two new iPad Pro models with the M3 chip, new iPad Air models, one of which is a 12.9-inch size, biggest iPad Air they've ever released, if that ends up being the case, a new Apple Pencil, and a few other things. That's not all the new products Apple might have in store that are making news, though, right, Nika?
Right. Another product Apple might want to roll out is its credit card, but in the UK. UK banks don't like that idea very much and have called for an investigation into what data Apple collects about spending habits and how it uses that data. UK users can already link their bank accounts to the Apple Wallet to monitor recent transactions and Apple balances, as well as use the card for Apple Pay. The banks are concerned, however, that Apple could collect that data and use it to inform their competing products. Apple says all information for Apple Pay users' profiles is stored locally, but does not specifically comment on data brought into the Apple Wallet when users connect third-party banking accounts.
I don't know about you, Nika, but it sounds like the banks protest too much here. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that the issue is what they make it seem. It sounds to me is that they are a little bit jealous that they don't get their hands on all of that wonderful, wonderful data that Apple has collected, and they want access to that so that they can, in the words that I just said, inform their competing products. So they want to be able to use that data, I think, to upsell their current customers and see what the trends and what the habits are to see what more can we get from these customers in that way.
Yeah, I think it's fair to investigate, honestly. I think that's good due diligence before launching in a market, asking the government to say, like, hey, make sure that's staying on device. They say most of the info stays on the device. Let's just make sure of it. I'm into that. I would like that to be proven. But the banks aren't asking this out of concern for you or me, are they?
They
were having a conversation in Discord, the DTNS Discord, earlier today, about the fact that your credit card companies will share information about your purchases with other advertisers. That's what these banks are concerned about, is that their monopoly over that charge information will be taken away, because they don't protect the privacy of this information as much as a lot of people assume Apple does.
Right. And one of the biggest selling points of Apple is that the way that they care and handle for their users' data. It's usually locally encrypted on the device so that even Apple doesn't have access to some of that data. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, the other guys are giving it to us. Why won't you allow us to have access to this as well? So I think the crux of this is just that they want access to that data to be able to use it however they see fit. And they're just using this lawsuit and this new launch as a way to say, hey, let's see if there's anything we can do to get that data for ourselves.
Not to mention Apple Card's a competitor, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't want another competitor there. If I try to think about this from the other side, what is legitimate is that Apple has been getting more and more into advertising, as have all technology companies, through the App Store mostly, and placing advertisements for app developers within the App Store so they can collect a little money from them, show you some promoted apps and such. That's going to introduce a little conflict of interest, where it would be tempting for Apple to say, well, gosh, we do have all of this purchase information from people. You know, if we anonymize that and then linked it, we could target ads more effectively. So that's why I'm like, making sure they're not doing that they're not giving into the temptation is fair, because that is something that would improve Apple's advertising business.
Yeah, it would give them an unfair advantage.
Yeah.
Completely agree. Yeah. But I think, time will tell to see how this kind of all pans out. But I think there are some conflicting motives here on either side. Again, we live in a capitalistic society, so everybody is trying to find the edge on how they can increase the revenue and the market cap for their companies.
Yeah, I guess where I end up coming down is just because it might be a selfish motivation on the credit card company's part doesn't mean it's not a fair question.
Absolutely.
So yeah, let's investigate and find out. And Apple can be a little bit reticent to be transparent at times. So sometimes you got to push them a little, and I'm good with that as well.
Yeah.
Keeping on the payment technology side of things, in Nigeria, which many of you may not know is the largest economy on the continent of Africa, stores may have as many as 10 payment machines to accommodate the many different bank cards issued on different payment systems. But restofworld.org reports that a lot of people are starting to ask for their cards to be read by the MoneyPoint terminal instead of the one from their bank, because MoneyPoint works with multiple cards. As of January, 2.3 million businesses in Nigeria use MoneyPoint, and it is considered widely to be the most reliable of the payment systems in the country. Customers say it has lower decline rates. Even when you're using your own bank's terminal, sometimes cards will be declined when they shouldn't be. It also instantly reverses a transaction if a payment fails, which is better for the businesses. Some of the other terminals will have a delay, and that means customers could walk out thinking the payment succeeded, only to have it reversed later, and then the merchant's left going, oh, well, now I don't have their money, but they have the stuff, and they already left.
Right. The company makes most of its money on transaction charges, but also offers business loans. Its biggest competitor is China's OPay, which has a 37% market share to MoneyPoint's only 20%. But MoneyPoint has banking licenses that OPay just doesn't have, and which lets MoneyPoint offer services like collecting deposits and offering its own POS terminals. MoneyPoint's business managers also are well-known members of the communities that they serve. The managers get paid commissions for every new customer sign up, as well as ongoing payments based on those terminals transactions as well.
Yeah, I thought this was fascinating, and it's another example of restofworld.org doing great work to spotlight this. Because MoneyPoint is doing a similar thing to another Rest of World article we talked about recently, where a streaming service was a subsidiary of a traditional cable and broadcast company, was using its relationships that it's developed over the years while giving people the room to innovate to dominate streaming in the region. MoneyPoint was founded in 2015 as a company called TeamApt, providing software to financial industries, and then got a banking license in 2019 so that it could start acting as an intermediary between banks and customers. And that's when it was able to get the point of sale license, make its own machine, be able to take multiple bank cards, and realized, well, wait, we're a local company. You know, mm-hmm. OPay is coming from China. They don't know people around here. We know people around here. So they did another great example of how you succeed as a startup, work within the community you're from. And I thought it was really interesting with that, what you were saying about the business managers. You know, they're finding people in the community to be like, you know, folks, you go to church with folks, you hang out at the market with folks. So you're going to have a better chance to convince merchants and convince people that MoneyPoint is a good bet. And it turns out it looks like it's working.
Yeah. And if you're being honest, if you think about just things that you do in your everyday life, referrals are golden. If you get some information on a product or a service from someone that you know and trust, you're more likely to be open to going with that particular service or product, especially if it's, you know, quote unquote, homegrown, and it's from your region, it's from your area, and it gives you a little bit more comfort when it comes to making those decisions, especially when it comes to finances, when it comes to your money, when it comes to your bank. It gives you a certain level of comfort and assurance in how you go about your everyday life when you're making purchases for, you know, just being able to live and move throughout your own community.
One of the reasons I like stories like this is I think we tend to assume that the big companies, you know, the Amazons and the Microsofts and the even the Walmarts of the world are the ones who are going to provide the services everywhere eventually. That sure, there might be a local company. They'll get run out of business when the big folks come in. And it's not always true. And granted, you probably aren't familiar with Opay if you're not in China, but that's the heavyweight, right? That's the that's the one from overseas that has the big backing and all the money behind it. And a local business is showing, no, if you want to be from out of market and succeed, you have to act like you're from the market, or you have to hire people that have relationships within the market, and you have to empower local control, because that's how MoneyPoint is doing it. And once again, it is interesting to see the innovation that you get in places like Nigeria and Kenya, where M-Pesa came from, you know, back in the day and revolutionized payments. So I would keep an eye on what MoneyPoint does next. They solved a problem that is very specific to Nigeria in this case, but they seem to be very efficient and very good. And I'm curious if they start expanding outside of Nigeria, what we see.
Right. And if you think about it, everything is cyclical. If you think about small towns, when the big box stores came in, when you got a Walmart, when you got, you know, a Publix or a Kroger, it was like, oh, wow, this is great. We have so much access to so much more. But on the flip side of that, when you have large companies come in, as you mentioned, they don't know the community as well. They don't know the way that people move throughout that community. And it can be a negative. And a lot of times you see, you know, these huge companies like a Walmart, like an Amazon, they just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And sometimes they don't necessarily treat the local economy, the local environment the best. And people notice that and they say, hey, now we have this option of something that's a little bit closer to who we are, to what we're used to. And we're going to support that.
Yeah. And David Grizzly Smith in our chat brings up a good question. He's a little snarky about it. He's like, how long until there's a security breach from MoneyPoint as it gets big? Because the bigger you get, the bigger of a target you are. So that is a question. Like, okay, now that they're successful and people are going to be coming for them, how is their security? And I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that it's not good because I don't know. But that is something that these companies also have to pay attention to. And I'd be interested to see what their strategy is there as well.
Yeah, it's a valid point. But at the same time, there have been some pretty large companies that have had data breaches as well. So you can't always necessarily, you know, pin it on, you know, a smaller company not quite having security, even though that is a great point to bring up, that, you know, you would hope that they have locked down on their security, ensure that their customer data is safe and protected
before they become the big company. Well, folks, Apple has lots of power users and hipster users, but what about the rest of us? Sarah Lane and Eileen Rivera do Apple Vision Show every week on Mondays to talk about whether Apple's vision matches what they want. You probably have checked it out, but if you haven't yet, join in on the fun. You can watch it live at our YouTube and Twitch channels, or you can enjoy it at your leisure. Get subscribed right now at applevisionshow.com. Check it out.
MIT Technology Review has an excellent article by Will Douglas Heaven called Large Language Models Can Do Jaw-Dropping Things, But Nobody Knows Exactly Why. As always, we recommend you read the whole thing, but let's talk a little bit about what's in the article. Tom, the underlying puzzle is that we know what large language models do, but we don't know why.
Yeah, no, I think it's something that some people are aware of, but not everybody. Advances in AI haven't come from a grand design of the internals, but from trial and error. You try stuff out and you see if it works. And if it works, then all the other scientists, with permission, because it's the way science works, copies that and then tries other things that they think might improve stuff. The ideas that don't work, you never hear about. Those get discarded. But the ones that do work are kept. It's an experimental approach. It's not a theoretical approach. Large language models train on data and somehow have been able to generalize from that data to other data. They're really complex versions of what's called a Markov chain. That's something that's just really good at predicting what comes next. A Markov chain could maybe be trained to do something like understand English, but the large language models can understand French even when they're only trained on English. That's the generalization that we're talking about. And we don't know why. We just know that it happens. And the longer you train on data, the better these things get, up to a point, because of a statistical principle called overfitting.
Now, I've heard of overfitting, but let's explain what that means.
Sure. Overfitting, it's when a model is too precise. It's got too much data and it can't generalize from that. So I was trying to think of a good example of this. Let's say you're plotting out temperature and the day. So you've got, you know, days along the bottom axis and temperature. If you do that spaced out across a year, you could draw a curve, right? And you would see hotter temperatures in the summer and you'd see colder ones in the winter. And then you could generalize from that, like, oh, well, okay, if you ask me what a temperature is in the winter, I'm going to guess colder because that's the way the line looks. But if you have lots of data, let's say for every hour, and you look closely at that data, now you'd have a wiggly line that goes up and down every day, right? And so unless you back out and view less of that data, you won't be able to see the trend of the months because you're confused by the trends of the days. Now, I'm mixing a lot of metaphors here, so statisticians don't get too upset with me. But in general, that's overfitting. You have too much data, and so you see the wiggly line. You can't see the trend. And up until you have too much data, the model can't predict outside the confines of the data it has.
Except large language models have beaten overfitting, right?
Yeah, they have. Scientists appear to be wrong about overfitting, or at least they were thinking about it in the wrong way. There's a little bit of debate about that. Heaven opens up his article from Technology Review with an example of folks at OpenAI trying to teach a model years ago to do basic addition, to just add two numbers. And the model could do anything it was trained on. You trained it on 2 plus 2, it could do 4. You went 3 plus 2, it could do 5. But if you hadn't trained it on 3 plus 3, it couldn't generalize to new addition until one day they forgot to turn off the model's training run. Usually it got to that overfitting limit and they're like, okay, it's actually getting worse. Turn it off, right? Makes sense. They forgot to turn it off, left it training, and it figured it out and started to generalize. It started getting better again after a certain point. It got worked past the overfitting. Other scientists have reported similar situations. They call it grokking, but it's similar to another phenomenon called double descent. That's when a model's size, instead of the time that it's trained, shows it reducing errors, then increasing errors because it's getting too big, then reducing them again.
And some folks are working on trying to uncover what's going on inside of these models, right? Inside of what's going on in the black box.
Yeah. So they're taking an experimental approach, trying to do smaller, sometimes older models, more specific things under controlled conditions that you can vary and see, like, okay, if I change this condition, what happens to the model? This is like doing an experiment in physics, right? Like, let's collide these two particles and see what comes out of it. Except it's weirder because in this case, we created it. We didn't create physics, but we created the large language models. We just don't know how it works.
Yeah.
So you've worked with this stuff, right, Nika?
Yeah, I have. Not on the large language model side, but I have created algorithms before. I have implemented algorithms before. But I think it's one thing to note, in the beginning of the article, when they realized that they left it running for a longer amount of time, and they talked about how it was like a light bulb went off. And as I was reading it, I was like, you know, this is kind of what people think AI is, right? It's going to become sentient. And I was like, is there any more sentient behavior than if you think of a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old learning addition, and they have the simple model, 2 plus 2 is 4. And it just doesn't make sense. The child just can't get it, mm-hmm, can't get it. Mm-hmm. And then one day the light bulb just goes off over the course of time. And I had a little chuckle because I was like, this is probably the closest sentient behavior, mm-hmm, that we've seen, you know, from a model, because again, we have our thoughts on what a model should do, how long it should take. You have these HPCs that are just churning out data just left and right. I mean, these huge, you know, amounts of data that they're burning through to to train on to be able to try and learn and figure out what's going on. And what they realize, the longer time you give it, the better it becomes. And sometimes if you just kind of step outside of what you assume should happen, and a mistake or a lack of, I guess, focus or whatever you want to call it, that led them to the point where, oh, we just forgot because we were doing something else, and the model continued to run, and they saw that it corrected itself. And that is, you know, just one of the things of science. This is all, you know, we're creating all these new things, and this is just sometimes how it happens. A happy accident, you know, resolves the issue and gives you a little bit more insight.
Yeah. And I think it does make me understand a little more why some very respected scientists in this field are concerned about artificial generalized intelligence working faster than we expect, right? Most of the scientists working in this field say there are limits to how good these things are. You can see those limits in your daily life. And we're not going to get to, you know, the sentient AI that goes rogue anytime soon. But like you said, when you see it do this and you're like, okay, but I didn't expect that. What else do I not expect it to do that it's going to do? It does kind of creep in, you know, emotionally, make you go, well, but I don't know. I can't guarantee it won't display any kind of behavior because I'm actually not able to tell how it works. So that's why the experimental approach that's trying to understand why it does things the way it does, it is, I think, really important, because the more we can understand how it works, the less, you know, the less uncertainty we have that it might just go rogue someday.
Right. It's all, again, when you're entering a new frontier, it's one of those things where it's just like, I thought I knew what it was. I had a certain, you know, reasonable expectation of what it would do and how it would turn out. And then it completely goes in the opposite direction. It's like, oh, I didn't expect that. That one kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah. And this is, you know, the big thing that I keep trying to explain to people is that the copyright issues with training are real, but they aren't what a lot of people think they are. And I think this is another way of understanding that is there's not a database of the books it was trained on in there. There's someone wrote in and was like, yeah, but it had to make a copy to train on it. So there is a copy involved, and that's right. That's where the discussion should be focused. But when the model works, I think a lot of people think, well, it's got a copy of, you know, the New York Times in there and it looks at it. So that's infringement. It doesn't. It's a big Markov chain. It doesn't even know what the New York Times is. It's just predicting what the next word should be. And we don't even know how it does it. We just know that it does, and it works better than it ought to. So it's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Let's check out the mailbag. There's lots of AI stuff in our mailbag, but let's start with giving you a break from AI. Robert wrote in response to Spotify adding an audiobook only option to its subscription. We talked about that last week. Robert says, this Spotify deal is tempting. I have an Audible account. However, some of my favorite authors are intentionally not releasing on Audible due to their prohibitive revenue share drop-off when not exclusive to Audible. Brandon Sanderson is one such author. So the Spotify deal would be tempting if it has the books I can't get on Audible. However, a lot of the books I listen to are towards the 20-hour mark. So would I need to time my listening to the end of the month so it rolls over into the next month? Because they only give you 15 hours for free on Spotify.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's, it's strange. I'm not a Spotify user. I used to be. I dropped the service a while back.
Oh, yeah.
But it's interesting. I have an Audible account. And I personally like reading the books better. I can kind of use my own imagination in what's on the page. But I get a lot of people love to listen to books. So
Then Pepe Kevin pointed out that the Doctor Who audiobooks are only on Spotify in the United States anyway. This plan change makes him think more seriously about adding a Spotify plan, even if it's not just the audiobook plan.
Interesting.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah. And back on the AI front, we have Martin who wanted to add to our discussions last week regarding Google AI. Google was not ready for Gen AI to take off the way it did, and it has not the types of AI that they had been perfecting. The recent updates to Google Maps, for example, walking directions, panning the camera, and being able to figure out your position and direction in unique AI, but it's not Gen AI. Text-to-speech, even ChatGPT uses Google's AI service. Second is that Google can't be the best at providing AI responses from searching until someone else does it first. Otherwise, every government is going to pass laws stopping them from doing it. It's multiple countries had so much problems with Google News. Gen AI is an actual threat. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, OpenAI is going to start having those same problems. But yeah, the bigger you are, the more scrutiny on everything that you do.
Absolutely.
That's why we're small. And we're happy to stay that way. Thank you, Nika Monford, for being with us today. As always, where can folks go to find more of what you do?
You can find me at Tech Savvy Diva pretty much everywhere on the internet. You can also find me on Snapple West Podcast, which is a podcast that I co-host with Terrence Gaines, who is also a contributor to DTNS. And it's an Apple-focused podcast where we talk all things Apple and then some. So definitely check us out over there.
Yeah, end your week with Snob OS Cast, and then you can begin your week with Apple Vision Show. But, you know, it's
right.
get the multiple perspectives.
Get all the Apple info.
Indeed. Special shout out to the Colchester Little League 2023 team, and a big thanks to Margo, who dropped this plaque by our house. We sponsored a Little League team last year because Matt was like, well, I can't sell you a team, but you could sponsor my Little League team. So we took him up on it. And it was really nice. It says, with aww, thanks to our sponsor, Daily Tech News Show, Colchester Little League 2023. So thank you, Matt. Thank you, Colchester Little League. Thank you, Margo, for the plaque. That's very nice. Patrons, stick around for the extended show, Good Day Internet. Nika and I are going to talk about Apple's increasing habit of just announcing stuff on the web instead of holding an event. We just talked about the M3 MacBooks. That's an example. Do we like that better? Stick around. We'll discuss. You can also catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
The DTNS family of podcasts, helping each other understand.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
All right. I'm going to put this back over here.
Nice little plaque there, and it's shaped like a baseball diamond.
Yeah, it's like a home plate.
Oh, like a home plate.
Yeah, that's sweet. And it was so funny because she's like, we have a plaque for you, and I'd like to get it to you. And I was like, well, I'm out in Los Angeles, not in Connecticut, so, you know, you might have to mail it. And I was willing to, like, I'll pay for the shipping or whatever. And she's like, well, I'm flying out to L.A. tomorrow. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, that's cool. Like, I could come meet you. This is where I am. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, because LA is a big place. And she's like, actually, my aunt lives like right near you. She's like, it'll be super easy to drop it off. So it was so nice. It all worked out.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So I talked about this a little in my Substack newsletter. It was a big change when Apple stopped announcing products at conferences. Remember, like, they used to do all the announcements at Macworld. The iPhone was announced at Macworld and started holding its own events. I remember people skeptical then, like, well, Apple's just going to, how are people going to pay attention if it's not at a conference? Turns out they did. And then during lockdowns, Apple had to learn, like the rest of the companies, how to pre-produce announcements, and record them, because you weren't going to have people in person. And so last year, it actually tried using pre-produced videos without an event. They announced the M2 MacBook Pro. They announced the Mac Mini. They announced the second-gen HomePod that way. And, of course, today we have the news that they announced the M3 MacBook Airs and possibly will be announcing new iPads, which they didn't even announce new iPads last year, but they might be announcing new iPads just by, you know, publishing videos and a page and all of that. Nika, I know you follow these announcements closely and have for years. Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference on how they do this?
So I think it just, with the evolution of time, I honestly think it makes sense. Because if you think about the, what I assume, extreme effort it takes to put on an in-person event or even a pre-recorded, you know, production that we saw during COVID. I think it's a lot of work. And what I'm coming to appreciate, maybe it's because I'm getting older, is that at a lot of these events, I think we've gotten to a point in a lot of consumer technology that we're seeing very similar things, just an updated version, you know, a better screen, a better processor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so much, you know, chip design we can go over. There's only so much performance over the previous product or over competitors that we can see. And I think it, honestly, I think it's a smart move to go to this format. It may lose some of the luster and attention that an event brings, but with the loyalty base of Apple users, I don't think that they'll see, you know, a huge downturn. And then people are going to get on social media, talk it up. They're going to, you know, roll out their announcement to say, hey, go look at this on the website or go to YouTube and look at this new video. I think for me, unless it's something, you know, fairly extraordinary outside of WWDC, because we know that, you know, it's for developers.
Right.
And, you know, you have the different sessions, the different keynotes, the labs, those type of things. But when it comes strictly to releasing new products, if it's not something to me, you know, significant, then I don't mind a video, a pre-produced thing, a press release. To me, I don't mind it so much.
Yeah. I for a long time, and this is not just Apple, a lot of times it's Google, Samsung, and others, will complain during an announcement that this is just dragging out me writing down things that I could have understood with 10 minutes of reading, right? And that's coming from the perspective of someone doing Daily Tech News Show, which is not what these companies are targeting when they make these announcements. I totally get that. But I look at this and I'm like, you know, this could have been a press release. It would have been faster and more effective. And I'm just sitting here getting frustrated waiting for you to drag it out. Now, there have been two different things that address that. One is a lot of times Samsung will release all their NDAs at the beginning of their announcement. I can just go to TechCrunch and The Verge and start reading about all their stuff before they've even gotten up at stage, talked about it. That way, all I need to pay attention to on the stage is, do they have a surprise? Is there an interesting guest shows up? Mm-hmm. You know, is there a demo goes wrong or something like that?
Right.
But I can actually just read the articles and learn about the products faster, or what Apple's doing, which is like, we'll just not hold an event at all. Right. We'll just give you the information and, you know, they're out there doing press briefings with folks like The Verge and TechCrunch and all of that, but they're not holding a big event. So I prefer that. I do get that what Apple's judging is how much of a splash are we going to be able to make, right? Because the reason they did keynotes at Macworld was, well, there's a stage, there's a bunch of people gathered. Like, we don't have to do any of the work. We just step on stage. I mean, you have to do work to put together the presentation, of course. But I'm just saying, they didn't have to hold the event, right? They can show up and use the event. And it's less work than if they have to hold the whole event themselves. And I guess it just became, they started to do the calculation that if they held the whole event themselves, then they have the entire news cycle to themselves, right?
Yeah.
Because if you're at CES, you're sharing the news cycle with everybody else.
With everybody. Yeah.
Not that Apple's ever been to CES, but even at Macworld, they were sharing the news cycle. So they kept the news cycle. But then you have the expense. You have to like invite everyone and have a location and do all that stuff. So I'm with you. It does come down to, if these things are just a processor upgrade, then Apple never put those in their events anyway. They always just released a press release. So maybe it's the next step to be like, even the iPads, you know, they're pretty mundane. But when you're going to have an Apple Vision Pro or something, then you're going to have an event because you want everybody to get all excited about it.
If you're going to have a redesign, you know, something along those lines that you know, as you mentioned, will make a splash, will be not just on the tech news websites, but will be on the main news, whether it be on your CNNs or your Emmett, you know, whatever your main news source is, what's going to make it to those? And that's, to me, that's maybe the thought process of when we have something big and flashy and razzle dazzle that's going to make a splash internationally, then yeah, that's what we're going to do an event on. But for you know, new Macs, new iPads, outside of, like I mentioned, a major redesign or overhaul, it doesn't need a big production.
Yeah. I mean, it just points to the fact that the iPad is a commodity now.
Yeah.
Like they don't need to have a big announcement for this stuff, or at least they don't feel they do. It yeah. looks like anyway.
Yeah.
Do you think they ever do that with the iPhone?
I don't think so. I think the iPhone is the flagship product, and I think we'll always get an iPhone event. I think so.
It would have to be a change in the landscape to where the iPhone isn't the flagship anymore. And I don't know what that would look like, right? But yeah.
Right. Unless they're trying to make Vision Pro the flagship, but it's not accessible to everyone. And at this point, an iPhone is accessible to anyone. In the beginning, iPhones were super exclusive, mm-hmm. very much a status symbol. But, you know, most of the country, I mean, let's be honest, most of the world has an iPhone. And most people are interested in the iPhone. Even the people who don't like Apple, even the people who say, I'm not buying a new iPhone, I just got one, it looks the same, mm-hmm. they didn't change things. They want to be able to talk crap about it on social media. So people are going to engage. They are going to, you know, it's going to be a conversation. And at this point, I don't see an Apple product that does this for Apple outside of iPhone.
I mean, it's weird how quickly the iPhone became the Apple Halo product, and Macintosh has been sort of kind of like, yeah, it's your office equipment, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, like the same way
weird.
We used to think about fax machines. No one ever really spent like a 30-minute keynote extolling the virtues of their high-resolution, you know, fax machine.
Did you see the new Epson fax?
Like,
so
it's
it comes
and it saves them money because they don't need it. It's you know.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the idea that, you know, the Mac was the premier product of Apple from its inception in the 80s into the 2000s. And then the iPod felt like, oh, that's the product. That's what Apple is now, right? It's the iPod. But that only lasted a few years until the iPhone came along and took all the air out of the room. So just goes to show, like, yeah, the iPhone is probably the Mac. It will probably continue to be the Mac for a long time. And I think it'd be fun to imagine, like, what does the world look like when the iPhone becomes the Mac? Where it fades into the background? What would it take to push the Mac into the background? But there was a time when you would have thought, well, there's nothing that Apple could put out that would drive the Mac away. You know,
right.
So it would, I'm not saying it's the Apple Vision Pro, but it would have to be something like that where it becomes cheap, lightweight, and does everything that the phone does, you know, and you still need a phone for a couple of things, just like you still need a Mac for a couple of things. But most people are just wearing the Apple, the Vision eyeballs that are implanted in your head or whatever.
I mean,
did you see the guy who wore his Vision Pros at his wedding?
Oh yeah, I saw the picture of that. Yeah,
yeah, I was like, oh my god,
to the chagrin of his bride. Apparently,
his bride, she was like over it.
Yeah,
I gotta see this picture.
I think there is a point in the future, and I don't know when it is. It's not soon. I'm with you.
No,
where something else takes the place of the iPhone, and the iPhone becomes more of a commodity, perhaps, or even goes away, like the iPod. It felt like the iPod would never go away, and it's gone.
A music player that holds thousands of songs.
You don't need
a Walkman. You don't need CDs. You don't need cassettes. It's
when SNL was making fun of that, like they were doing like the ever smaller,
smaller iPod
that was like the size of a stick of gum, and it will hold every music, every song ever created by man. And it's one of those things that I think when you capture a cultural zeitgeist, it kind of has a much more impact. Mm. And I don't think the next thing, I don't think the next thing will be a single piece of hardware. I think it will be in the whole ecosystem around it that Apple will
that would be flying. The other option, right? If it's not a thing that takes the place of the iPhone, it's the services become the star, right? And because Apple is trying to pivot to making their money off the services.
Yeah. Subscriptions galore.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Take a bite of the apple.
Thought. Imagine a world where the iPhone just gets announced in a press release. The new iPhone gets announced in a press release, but they have a whole keynote about, you know, Apple One. And it's like, here's the fitness and the Apple TV shows and the movies. Yeah. And like, you know, the keynote could be announcing the new line of stuff, the services, apps, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild to even think, because
it's not impossible.
It's not impossible. It's just to it's think weird. That our mobile devices are literally attached to us. You won't leave the house without it. If you do, by some weird happenstance, leave the house without it, you're gonna stop. You're gonna turn around and you're gonna come back.
Oh my God, hold on, I forgot my phone. Yeah.
How many times? Oh, no, or people always, oh my God, where's my phone? Yeah. I do it all the time with my Apple Watch. I was like, oh my God, I don't know where my phone is, and I'll ping it so I can find it because I don't know where it is, but I need to know where it is. So yeah.
I mean, have you ever been halfway driving somewhere, it's like, I don't have it, and you turn right around and go back home to get it?
Yeah.
Because I've done that twice.
Yep.
I notice really fast because I'm either expecting a podcast or music to come up in the car. And if it doesn't, then I immediately are like, oh crap, I don't have my phone. Unless I'm not driving. I've done that where I get in, Eileen's driving and I'm like, oh no, I left the phone. One time I even went ahead and went to the restaurant.
Really?
Yeah. And I said, you just have
so
to talk
brave.
To
me. My wife is like that. She says, as long as you have your phone, it doesn't matter. Because, you know,
as long as somebody has a phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then in the future, it'll just be something that you'll have, a dermal like adhesive, and it just like gets glued onto your forearm.
Yeah.
Or you just pop the lens into your
contact lens,
you know, like a contact. Yeah.
Well, with the Apple One service, you'll never have to worry about leaving anything behind because it's with you wherever you go.
Apple One for your brain.
And then once they start having an award show,
I don't know exactly what it is, but
once,
yeah.
Soon
once
as babies are born, we're going to slap their tracker, their everything in them. They need to, you know, get that early adoption in.
I once pondered if, like, I'm amazed Netflix hasn't done it yet, but at some point, one of these streaming services, whether it's Apple, whatever, they're going to do their own award show where they're just going to give out awards for like the best, whatever. Like, it's going to be so self-indulgent, but it's going to happen because you
Apple
have
does awards for apps already, right? Like, so there's the groundwork is there.
Like, you get an Apple or you get the Jobs, and it's just like, you know, it's like a trophy of something. I don't know.
So in a lot of
that's
countries.
Steve Jobs standing in his turtleneck.
a turtleneck, that's your award.
Broadcast networks or big cable networks will do awards for their own stuff. So like, you know, they'll have it would be the equivalent of like if CBS did an award show for CBS stuff, like, you know, best actor on a CBS show. I could almost imagine a company starting to do like award shows for their own content, right? Netflix awards for its own, the Flixies or something.
And remember,
if no one will award me, I'll award myself. So there.
I mean, people watching, you know, get their eyeballs on you.
Yeah. Remember the MTV Movie Awards were kind of started as a joke, and then they sort of kind of got enough momentum. It's like, oh, that's sort of legit.
Well, the VMAs, the Video Music Awards, too, same thing, right? It was like, oh, this is just us awarding ourselves something for things we play, and they're still going. VMAs are still huge.
People love award shows. They love the pageantry, the drama.
The interviews, the clothes, the makeup. What are they going to wear? You know, because you know at like the VMAs or the Grammys, it's always like who's going to come with the kookiest outfit because they're creatives and they're, you know, so weird. And then who's going to give the speech that's going to make you cry or the speech that's going to make you laugh or who's going to mess up? Yeah.
there's like a similar feel to the way people do predictions for sports betting or, you know, political events. Like with award shows, there's like this whole ecosystem, that cottage industry, that springs up around like what you were saying, Nick. It's like, what are people wearing? What are people saying? The politics, like who snubbed who before, and therefore we'll get, like, you know, the revenge this award season.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny to me. It's definitely one of those topics. I wish there was a word. I'm sure there's some German word for it, but for when something is so popular, everyone hates it. Like, you talk about award shows and people are like, oh, nobody cares about award shows. That's just self-congratulatory BS. And it's like, yeah, but a lot of people like them or they wouldn't happen, right? Like,
yeah,
you wouldn't have so many different award shows if you couldn't get people to pay attention to them. They'd go away.
Yeah. Wherever the eyeballs are,
yeah,
especially in the social media age, that's where, even if it's the most stupid, asinine thing that nobody wants to do or doesn't make sense, but if people are tuning in, if people are talking about it, they're going to keep churning it out and keep creating, you know, even offshoots of mm-hmm. it to keep people engaged. Yeah.
So, ESPN started the ESPYs.
ESPYs.
Not as a joke, but as sort of like, you know, we need to fill a hole in the calendar. Like, fine, let's just do it. Let's just do something. And it's still going. There's something. And I know you listening right now are a total exception. You're not the person that this applies to, of course, but everyone else has this thing where we want to see who wins, right? Mm. Give me a list of five things and then let me go, ooh, I would pick that one. Let me see if it wins. Right. There's something essential to human nature.
And when your pick doesn't win, it's just like rage.
Yeah,
like,
then you get to have
it
that.
It should have,
right?
been this,
yeah.
Because A, B, C, and D, and you're writing a Twitter, you know, dissertation on why your color of shoes should have been the best color of shoes.
I think, you know, and it's weird. I think people are really invested and emotionally over top with it, because at the end of the day, it really doesn't affect your life. Right,
watching a popular television show doesn't affect your life either, but people get all worked up about it.
Because what I'm saying is, you can emotional energy in it, because in the back of your mind, you know, it's consequential to your mood.
It's like a safe thing to get worked
yeah,
up
exactly.
About
so yeah, even yeah. if you're, yeah, I get you. Even if what you pick doesn't work out, you're not like despondent. You're like bummed.
Yeah.
Like, I was bummed the Niners lost, but I wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go lock myself in the closet for like 6 months while I weep, you know, or anything like that. Because,
but then again, yeah. there are people who do take it to that extreme. Yeah, there's something yeah. for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
That's know? True.
Everybody has their vice.
It's a Baskin Robbins of flavors.
Yep, absolutely.
I do think, well, and you can have, we didn't talk about the fact that you can get all the picks right, and then you feel like you achieved something, even though you didn't do anything, right? It's
yeah.
Which is also similar to cheering for a sports team and your sports team wins, you didn't play, but you get the jolt.
We did this. Yeah. Our defense was this, yeah. Our offense was this, you know, our quarterback or our, you know, point guard. I mean, it's all It really is all like community. It's like, you know, when you think of, you know, your individual life, you know, you're going about your everyday life, but then you have this thing that's your spark. It's your thing. It's, you know, what kind of gets you going, and you kind of, people latch onto that, yeah. and it brings, you know, a lot of people joy. It kind of, you know, it takes them out of maybe the mundaneness of what's going on with their own life or what's going on with them. And it gives them something to root for. It gives them something yeah, to root yeah. against.
It's like, it's like when the World Cup and Team USA is like, oh, it could possibly happen where like Team USA has this chance to win the World Cup, and everyone gets jazzed.
Suddenly
you see the bars
into
are filled.
It. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everybody's getting the jerseys.
Yeah.
Got them at Atlanta United today. But, you know, the hats, the scarves, it's cheering in the streets, there's flags on the houses. Like Olympic time, you know.
Oh yeah.
During the Olympics, this is like the most patriotic country in the world. People who are, you know, against, you know, who's in office or what the rulings are or whatever the case may be. But when it comes to the Olympics, when we can go against another country and prove our superiority in whatever sport it is, you know, we're super patriotic, man. Let's get the flags tattooed on our arms. People are really, you know, they are in it. And then after it's over, it kind of goes back to what their real thoughts are.
We'll beat Australia in ice hockey and we'll be
It's so funny to me that the Olympics is another one where I hear people like, no one cares about the Olympics. It's just trumped up, you know, capitalism, commercialism, blah, blah, blah. And then those same people are complaining like, but why can't I get the stream for the Olympics, you know, on Peacock? Or why is it only locked down behind a cable subscription? It's like, well, if you didn't care, why are you worried about it?
Why is the feed delayed?
But all of that has changed now. Like this last Olympics, Peacock had everything. It was easy to find, and none of it was delayed if you didn't want it to be. The most interesting thing I thought is that with everyone complaining about delays, they still provided a delayed package feed because a lot of people are like, oh, but the events are like really early in the morning. I don't want to watch till later, right? So they're like, well, we'll package it up and show you the highlights at a later time. It's a valuable thing to have the delay in some cases.
Yeah.
I love the fact that the Olympics, I like the Olympics, you know, it's something I have enjoyed even when I was a little kid. And maybe it has to do with the U.S. beating the Soviet Union in hockey. Like, that probably got me real excited as a young kid. But
the miracle was Miracle on Ice.
Yeah. But I've always liked it. And so I love the fact that we now have got to a point where you can just watch it however you want. You can have a delayed version that's in a convenient time. You can watch it on demand. You can watch it live. Like, it's great that we finally got to that situation.
And you can watch the sports you're interested in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we may have gotten to a situation
new ones
where we're not going to have the Olympics anymore someday. Yeah. I have no idea.
Did skateboarding make it in, or is that one of those?
No, skateboarding's in. Yeah. It's a summer event. I don't remember if it's like permanent or if that was like an experimental for the last
exposition
Olympics.
Or not.
Yeah.
What are they called?
But I just think it's really cool in that respect where like
exhibition.
I'm from the South. We don't have a lot of cold weather activities, but when you can watch like the Winter Olympics, like the Summer Olympics, you get it. You got basketball, you got track, got, you know, soccer, you have all the things that, you know, we're pretty familiar with. But then when you have like the short track speed skating or the, what's the one where they have the sweepers where they're
curling.
It's like those things. It's just like, this is the most fascinating thing.
Yeah.
But outside of the Olympics, would you watch a curling a national curling league? Would you
Some people are into it, but those people were into it before the Olympics, right?
Before the Olympics, right?
Yeah.
Get the regulation brooms and stones.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't use anything.
I have watched Olympic sports like ice skating or downhill skiing outside of the Olympics, but rarely. And I think I'm an exception, which is why, because they had an entire NBC sports channel devoted to Olympic sports. Then they had the Olympics channel, which I think still streams online, but that's not on cable anymore. There just weren't enough people watching. Skateboarding is a demonstration sport or an experimental sport. It was in the last Summer Olympics and it will be again in Paris. Mm-hmm. So it's on its way to becoming an official sport, but it's not an official one yet.
Yeah, so they have four new sports: breaking, sports climbing, skateboarding, and surfing. I know for my birthday last year, I went to Tahiti, and one of the things that the Tahitian people are very proud of is that they were hosting surfing preliminaries.
Oh, cool.
On their island, because they are a French territory. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where it's like, I thought surfing was already in the pantheon, but it's not. It's just like the other surfing tournament. Yeah.
It was an experimental sport in the last Olympics for the first time, and it was fascinating. It was really fun to watch. So I'm glad they're bringing it back. Where are they going to surf in France?
That's what I said. They're doing it in Tahiti.
The Olympics are going to the actual Olympics, not just qualifying.
The actual Olympics surfing is going to be in Tahiti.
It's going to be in.
And when I was there, and this was last March. And they were already, you know, you could see the Olympic signage and they were building and planning, and the people on the island were super excited that, you know, a part of the Paris Olympics was coming to their country.
Yeah. Ambassador Domo points out flag football is going to be an experimental sport for LA for the 2028 games.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's going to be fun. And breakdancing. Well,
breakdancing. That's cool. What I'm saying. Breaking is breakdancing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's in the Olympics now.
That's good. That's it. I can't wait to watch that. That's going to be super fun.
But like, how do they pick the preliminaries? Like, how do they pick who represents
is it an individual, or is it going to be like a team?
It's at the Paris Games. The breaking competition will comprise of two events, one for men, one for women. 16 B-boys and 16 B-girls will go face-to-face in solo battles.
Okay.
So it looks like they'll pick 16 girls and 16 boys, and they'll compete individually, I guess, until they whittle down to one for each. Well, three for each, gold, silver medal.
Nice. That's. I mean, with all of the like dance competitions out there, you know, there's so many like street dance competitions and competition shows. I feel like that it's kind of almost overdue for them to include something. If you can have ice dancing, if you can have rhythmic gymnastics, you know.
Yeah. Why not this form of dancing? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's cool. All right. Speaking of dancing, we're not dancing around our appreciation for the patrons. We got raises over the weekend from Sinister 208, Todd, Per Euborg, and Kevin, all up in their pledge. Cannot say how much we appreciate that. Thank you to all of you. Also good to see Dan and R.W. Nash and Howard chatting with everybody on Patreon. Everybody get in at patreon.com/DTNS. Hang out, talk to folks, talk to each other in the Discord. We got lots of great conversations going on over there as well. And thank you, Nika. Good to see
you. Thanks for having me. It was great. I'm a little tanned, but hey, glad to be here.
Are you rested or just tanned?
Rested and tanned. Okay, it was a great time.
Until tomorrow, everybody, have a good day.
Good day.
Good day.